You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Delirious Nomads. We are really, really getting into this. Every week is getting more fun. We've had a lot of great metal musicians on. We had Josh Barnett, a legendary MMA fighter. So I have to tell you, if you are a fan of this podcast, let your friends know, because we have a list of guests coming up that is just insane. We are so excited and thrilled with some of the guests that we have coming on. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, we are thrilled about our guests that we have today, which is we're going to discuss another interest of mine, and that's a big interest in both the metal and chef and kitchen communities, and that's tattoos. This is my good friend Paul Timmon, tattoo artist to the stars. He's tattooed a lot of rock stars. I'm sure we'll get into that. When I met him, he was at Sunset Strip Tattoo in LA. I guess, you know what? We'll just get into it as an organic conversation. Paul, thank you for being here. Matt and I are psyched to talk to you. Welcome to Delirious Nomads.
Thank you for having me. It's funny because when I saw your Instagram post about your podcast with Johnny Tempesta, and it reminded me, I actually needed to get in touch with him and talk to him to get in connection with another buddy of his. And I thought, man, I should hit up Chris about possibly doing his podcast, because I think I have some really great stories about all the rock and roll guys throughout the years that have been through the doors at Sunset Strip Tattoo, and then just the hours and nights I've spent with those guys out on tour and or at concerts and or at their house and parties, and the things I've seen would be great for a podcast. So I'm very excited to be here and super happy you guys had me on.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. You and I have become friends. I mean, so I think how we met was, most of the tattoos on my body, although this is changing the more I live in LA and I'm close to you, but most of the tattoos were done by Michelle Miles at Daredevil Tattoo in New York City. But you would come in every May for the tattoo convention. And Michelle introduced us, I think, or I'm not sure. You started coming to my restaurant every May at Stanton Social. And now I see you fairly regularly, whether you're coming to the restaurant or I'm coming to your shop, which, by the way, we have two tattoos that we've talked about that we really got to get moving on. So
I remember 100% of meeting you as I went to visit Michelle at Daredevil Tattoo for the New York City Tattoo Convention. And I said, listen, it was a Thursday night. I'll never forget it. We just flew in. We got in that afternoon. And I said, listen, I'm in New York for the first time in my life, and I want to eat this New York food that I keep hearing about. Where is something really good that's going to hit the spot? And she goes, oh, perfect. I got the spot. I'm like, where is it? She's like, right around the corner. Let me call it in, because if I didn't call it in, you would never even get into this restaurant. And I was like, I'm sold. Like, that's all you got to say. So, of course, we roll literally 20 yards, you know, north or south, and then 20 yards east or west, and we're at the Stanton Social front door.
South and west, yep.
Yeah, south and west. And so, it's a stone's throw away. And so we roll in. They seat us upstairs. I still have no clue where I'm at. And I was married at the time, and my wife hits me up. She's like, where are you at? I'm like, we're at some place called the Stanton Social. And she's like, you son of a bitch. And I'm like, what? And she's like, that's Chris Santos's place. And I can't believe you went there without me. And I'm like, who's Chris Santos? And what are you talking about? Because I wasn't into food at that point in my life. I had not yet sampled good food. So that night was an experience for me. Meeting you and like getting introduced to good food was kind of changed my life.
No, it's amazing. Well, yeah, you've certainly, like, you... you're very educated about food now, and you've also changed your diet somewhat over the years. But by the way, Matt, we didn't talk about this. Not only is Paul a celebrated tattoo artist, but he's a triathlete, right?
I am. I've done Ironman distance like John Joseph's, and him and I, you know, bond and talk about the triathlon stuff as much as I grew up listening to John's music. And I'm still a huge fan of like the Cro-Mags, you know, the Age of Coral album, which is, I hold them as having one album. I know they've had others.
Well, you know what's funny? They recorded the Age of Coral in Warren, Rhode Island, which is, I grew up in Bristol, Rhode Island. It's the next town over. My brother Jay, at the time when they recorded that record, had a record store around the corner, but they also sold, you know, guitars and strings and whatever. So during the recording of that, Harley would go over every day and ended up like talking to my brother for an hour or two each day. They didn't stay connected, but while they were recording the record, like Harley would take an hour or two break each day and go hang out with my brother at his record store, which is just crazy. My brother's not a metalhead or a punk guy at all.
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, especially that, because I know your brother.
It's like, right?
That's a cool story. That's like, since I'm just going to get into it, when I was working at Sunset and I started tattooing Josh Todd and the guys from Buck Cherry, like they were recording Time Bomb and they were at Sunset Sound, which is on Sunset Boulevard. So I would ride my motorcycle from my house in Pasadena over to Sunset Sound every day at 3:00. Josh and I would play basketball on the outdoor basketball court they had. And Keith would sit and smoke cigarettes and watch us play. And one day, the ball bounces over towards Keith and he grabs it. I'm like, all right, come on, give me the ball. I'm about to show Josh what's up, you know, laughing and just poking fun. And Keith's like, what are you doing tomorrow at 3? I go, I don't know, probably the same thing I do every day, coming over here, playing ball with Josh, and then heading in the tattoo. And he says to me, can you be here after that? And I go, for what? And he goes, we want you to record on our album. And I was like, you're funny. He goes, no, we want you to do vocals. And I started laughing. I go, I don't know if you know this, but I don't sing. I tattoo. And he goes, it doesn't matter. We want you to be on the album. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So for me, like, I was a fan of Buck Cherry. Not only was I friends with them, but like a fan. So I recorded 2 songs just in the background vocals for Time Bomb that I can hear myself in the vocals, you know, nobody else can, but I can hear it. And I still love that to this day that I'm on that album. It's pretty cool.
That's so funny. I have that record and I'm going to have to go back and listen to it now and see if I can hear you.
Yeah, it's so great. And Yogi, who was their other guitar player at the time, I was paired up on a mic with Yogi. So we all walked into the studio. Now, I had been behind the glass forever, like sitting there, like watching them record at the booth with their engineer and their producer. But I'd never walked behind the glass and been in the studio. So we go in the studio and everyone picks up their headphones. So I pick up my headphones and everyone puts them on and I put them on and the music cues. And I go, wait. What are the lyrics? And everybody starts laughing and they're like, oh my God. So Josh is like, give me a Sharpie and a pad of paper. So he grabs a legal pad, writes down the lyrics, slams them in front of me. And I don't even know how this is supposed to go or how it's supposed to go down. So I just kind of ad lib it and go with it. And then Yogi, like we do one take and Yogi goes, dude, you sound pretty good. And I go, stop. He goes, no, what is it with like you skinny tattooed white boys? He goes, sing that by yourself. I go, no way. I'm not singing in a room with Josh Todd and all of you guys. Like, I'm not doing that. He goes, I'll sing with you. And I'm like, okay. So they cue the music. And of course, the one person that starts singing is me. And of course, Yogi had it set up in the beginning, so he wasn't going to sing. And they're all in tears laughing. And they got me. It was good. But that's still one of my like fondest memories of being on the album Time Bomb.
Well, you know what's funny is, you know, I'm a big metal fan. I'm a multi-genre metal fan, but something that people might not know about me is that Josh Todd truly is one of my
top five favorite vocalists of all time. His voice is just so unique, and his solo record that he did way back in the day is still my favorite Josh Todd release.
So good.
Not because I don't like Buck Cherry, but just because it's so much heavier than Buck Cherry.
Flowers and Cages.
Yeah, dude, that fucking record is amazing. Amazing. But so I love Josh Todd. And I have to ask, did you do the big fucking giant tattoo on his back?
No, Kevin Quinn did that. You know, Josh Todd's been like an LA boy forever. I think it was Slam Hound was his first band or one of the first big ones, kind of a thing. Josh was like heavy into the music scene and doing all that stuff. And he's been around and in and out and getting tattooed. So he's had a good assortment of people. And I kind of got him at like the great point in his life when they kind of hit it. And I got to tattoo him. And people are like, dude, you tattooed the guy from Buck Cherry? And I'm just like, yeah. And I'm like, but I'm also not the only one. You know, he's got his whole back piece done by Kevin Quinn. Kevin Quinn did the majority of Josh's work. And Kevin Quinn, ironically enough, used to work at Sunset Strip Tattoo. So it's the same style of tattooing that Kevin was doing and I'm doing. Kevin's actually been tattooing him again recently. And those guys are still back out on the road. After all these years, those guys are still like, they're like 300 days on the year or more.
They just released a record, or they have a record coming out any minute now, right?
Yeah. I think it got released. What's the date today?
It's the 21st.
I think it comes out today, to be honest with you.
No, the records come out on Friday. So it's probably Friday.
Friday, yeah.
I'm gonna look right now. I can tell you right now. Hold on. But I remember, didn't you tell me, I think you can relay this story. I know that there are stories that you have that you can't relay because of the confidentiality of them. But didn't you have a fun story about kind of being on call as Tommy Lee's tattoo artist?
So actually, the first celebrity I ever tattooed at Sunset was Jason Bonham.
Oh, wow.
Growing up, you know, obviously Zeppelin, man. It's like John Bonham, Jason Bonham. And I was like, are you kidding me? And they're like, yep, it's yours. You're up. And I'm like, I'm going to tattoo Jason Bonham. And they're like, yep, do what he wants. Now, he was hammered. He was absolutely plastered. And one of the guys in the back was like, look, man, like, this is how some of these guys come in here. You just got to do the best you can. Get him in, get him out, do a good tattoo and send him on his way. And I'm just like, okay, easier said than done for a small town boy from Ohio that moves to Los Angeles, you know. He was literally falling out of the tattoo chair. I'm not exaggerating. When I was trying to put on the Zoso circles on his arm. And as you know, what's the hardest thing to tattoo on anybody's body? Perfect circles. It was an absolute nightmare of a tattoo, but a great experience that the first guy I got to tattoo was Jason Bonham at Sunset Strip Tattoo. And we bonded on riding dirt bikes and, you know, talking about that stuff. I didn't really talk to him about music too much. We talked more about motorcycles, which is how Josh and I kind of bonded too. As far as Tommy goes, I'll never forget that. I'll cherish that to the day I die. So I was working. It was a Saturday afternoon. Tommy calls the shop and he's like, hey, man, it's Tommy Lee. I'm like, hey, Tommy. And he goes, is Greg in? I said, no, he is off for today. Can I help you? And he goes, no, this is Tommy. Who's this? And I go, well, it's Paul. He goes, hey, man, have I met you? And I go, no. He goes, cool. He goes, can I get Greg's number? And I go, absolutely. I said, I'm the new guy at the shop, but I know you guys are buds, so I'll give you a cell and you can contact him. So go about my business. 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, the phone rings again, and it's Tommy. And he's like, hey, man, it's Tommy. And I go, what's up? He goes, well, Greg hasn't responded. And I go, oh, shit. He's actually in Santa Barbara. I forgot. He went to Santa Barbara for the weekend. So he's probably away from his phone. Tommy goes, well, shit, man, I got me and a friend that want to get tattooed up at my house. Can you come up and do it? I said, I can. I get off work at 5. I'd have to go home to Pasadena, grab my travel kit and head to you. Where do you live? And he's like, I'm up in Malibu. And I go, if that's cool with you time-wise. He's like, absolutely. He's like, here's my home number. Give me a buzz when you're on your way. So I'm sitting there like, same thing. Small town boy from Ohio, going to be going to Tommy Lee's house in Malibu.
How old are you at this point?
I was probably 23, maybe 24, you know, like 22 to 24. Right. Like still green, dude. Still very green. Still not like jaded by LA.
Matt Bacon age.
Yeah.
25 now, Chris, okay? I'm
Okay.
I've got like this whole Uncle Matt persona I'm breaking out.
By the way, I love that every episode we somehow get to fucking fuck with Matt and how he's a baby.
That's funny.
Or that I'm an old man. It's one or the other. It goes either way.
If I say you're an old man, I feel bad. It's like punching
down. I get it.
How old are you?
70. 50.
Fuck you. I'm 50.
I'm right behind you.
Anyway, so go ahead. Finish the story because I want to ask you about your triathlon shit. So finish the story. And then we'll go back to Rock Falls.
I head up to Tommy's house. I'm at the address. And of course, there's a huge gate and you can see these lighted, this lit house behind it. And I'm thinking, holy shit, this is the Mecca. Like, this is the mother load. I hit the buzzer, and which is new to me, you know, where I'm from. You walk up to somebody's door and, hi, I'm here for so-and-so. You know, there's a gate and a buzzer. I hit the buzzer and they're like, who is it? And he knew me by my nickname. And I'm like, it's Pee-wee. And he's like, oh, hey, Pee-wee, come on in. Of course, there's this, and then this gate proceeds to open. And as the gate opens, I mean, my face, it must have been priceless. This is the Malibu house that you saw on MTV Cribs. Him and Pamela had their kids, raised a family, which as they sold it later, when he sold it, it actually turned into a rehab house, which ironically enough is quite the difference from when they were there. But I go in, we end up tattooing. This is right after he got out of prison. So like he got released, he's doing Methods of Mayhem. So I'm there with T-Lo. And I'm there with Hawk, who was Tommy's security guard, which you probably have met throughout the years.
Yeah. And
I actually just spoke to Hawk like 2 days ago.
I was on the Methods of Mayhem tour bus at a Ozfest 1 year.
There you go.
I'm not sure how I got on there, and I'm not sure what happened when I was on there, but I just remember that I got that happened.
Did you meet Tommy, or were you just on?
Oh, yeah. No, I was on the bus with him. Yeah.
So great. So I go in, I tattoo T-Lo. I tattoo this big free Tibet across his forearms. And then Tommy's like, well, fuck, dude, we got to roll down to Long Beach. I'm sitting in on drums with Cottonmouth Kings tonight for the ASR trade show wrap up. Do you want to roll with us? And I'm like, you're kidding, right? He's like, no, just roll with us. So we roll down to the ASR closeout trade show. We get whooshed right in. We literally pulled his Suburban up in the middle of the parking lot and just stopped and got out. And I'm thinking, is that how you get treated as you're a celebrity? Like, this is insane. We roll right in. We get pushed up on stage. Tommy sits in on drums, does his thing. And he's like, come on, we're out. Like, we rolled out of there. We go jumping into the Suburban. Hawk is driving. Tommy's shotgun. Me and Diane are in the back seat, and T-Lo is off talking to some girls. There's a cop that's talking to Hawk, and he's like, is there any reason why you decided to park this car like this? T-Lo comes running in from the outside, jumps all the way through the Suburban. His head is out the front window, and he's like, because we're motherfucking Methods of Mayhem motherfuckers, and we fuck shit up. Hawk pushes him in the back seat, punches him in the chest, points in his face and goes, don't say another fucking word. Turns back without missing a cue. And he looks at the cop and he goes, I'm sorry, you were saying, officer? And I see Tommy in the front seat, like, take a gulp. You can see his Adam's apple move. And the cop looks at Tommy and goes, I can be the cop that sends you back to jail tonight. Get this fucking Suburban out of my city and I don't ever want to see it back in here as long as you live. And Tommy just goes, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. And Hawk just puts the window up and drives away. I was like, what the fuck just happened? Now, this is before TMZ. This is how long ago this was. This is when the National Enquirer was still around. So all I'm picturing is me on the cover of the National Enquirer in handcuffs, sitting next to Tommy Lee, and my mother calling me going, what are you doing getting arrested with all this riffraff? What are you doing? Like, that's all I pictured, is my family back home going, that's my brother. That's my cousin. It was crazy.
So let's take it back a beat before we get into the triathlon stuff, which I do want to hit because I think it's so incredibly impressive. But when did your interest in tattoos and being a tattooer or tattoo artist, whatever you want, do you consider yourself a tattooer or a tattoo artist?
Yeah, there's that debate. And I call myself whatever it is. I call myself a tattooist, a tattoo artist, a tattooer, whatever. It just, I go with the flow.
how is the Paul Timmon of today? Like, what was the genesis of that?
I got into Cleveland Institute of Art after the year I graduated high school in 1990, which is probably before Matt was born.
It was.
By the way, Matt, big ups to Matt. These last couple of podcasts we've been doing, he's in England, so it's like fucking 2 o'clock in the morning there or some shit.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow. Well, yes. Kudos to you.
All good.
Just to make you feel a little bit worse about delaying in the podcast today.
Sorry.
My next phone call is in 6 hours, Paul.
I'm sorry.
It's only 5 o'clock here, so.
Well, so I went to the Cleveland Institute of Art. I got in there and I was drawing and painting and doing everything. And
But you went there for why? Because you wanted to do what?
I was going to be a fine artist. And then I started getting into tattooing. And when I say tattooing, I started getting tattooed. So my love for tattoos, a buddy of mine in art school had some tattoo equipment in his apartment. So my best friend to this day and my roommate at the time was getting a shoulder piece done, and my buddy Josh outlined it, and he goes, "Hey, do you want to do some?" And I'm like, "Absolutely!" Like, I filled some in. And that night, walking back to our apartment, I'll never forget it. I said to him, "I'm like, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna tattoo." He's like, "Are you kidding?" I go, "No, like, I'm gonna full speed tattoo 100%. I know this is what I want to do." And it just hit me. And I never looked back. I actually dropped out of Cleveland Institute of Art after my third year. And it was a 5-year program. And I started tattooing on my own, got into a shop in Toledo, spent a little bit of time there. And then I headed west. Like, I came out to tattoo with the big dogs. Like, I figured if I'm going to do it, I want to do it 100%. And years later, as I got some fame and notoriety through tattooing and through like my dinnerware, the Cleveland Institute of Art now claims me as a graduate of CIA, which is great. So I can use that I graduated.
That's amazing. So a couple of questions. So why LA as opposed to, say, New York?
That's a good question. I think the sunshine, I think the beaches, I think I just kind of vibed with Los Angeles more than I did. Plus, I had came out to Los Angeles to visit a girl in San Diego. We drove up to Los Angeles. I actually visited Sunset Strip Tattoo, Tattoo Mania, Purple Panther, Black Wave. I hit all the big names. And when I was in Sunset Strip Tattoo, I met a guy who sort of offered me a job because he was going to leave that tattoo shop and go up on his own. And he made me a job offer, but he never got his shop up and running. So I came out before he got his going, and he felt bad about me being out here on my own, that he kind of got me into Sunset Strip Tattoo anyway. So it worked out great.
And what year was that you started at Sunset Strip?
It's been 27 years. I don't know. I'd have to do the math. Probably 28 years now. Yeah, I think 28 years.
So before we go from where you are now and how long you are at Sunset Strip and why you left and all that stuff, I have just a question I need answered. I ask all my tattoo artist friends this because I'm truly intrigued by it. How do you find your touch? How do you tattoo someone and not go too hard or not hard enough? And also, you know, in terms of getting the work done correctly so that the lines are fine and the colors are vibrant without causing someone to bleed excessively or whatever. Like, how do you find that touch? Like, a canvas is one thing, but a fucking human being is another thing. Like, how do you find that?
Ironically enough, that is done through a couple of things. And some people do it without knowing they do it, and other people do it 100% with intent. And I was fortunate enough to learn from Sunset Strip Tattoo where it was done with intent. So the sound of that machine, when it does this and it bogs, that's when you know you're in, as we call it, the sweet spot. So these new tattoo machines that don't have any sound, that literally look like dildos, which, you know, hey, more power to you if that's how you want to tattoo and if that's what kind of machines you want to use, but they don't have any sound and you don't know if you're in the sweet spot. And there's a reason why machines have stall set up that only, what's sad now is I would probably say 10% of the tattoo community know about stall in a machine, and that's the term it's called, because all the young kids, Matt's age, don't know anything about that. Sorry, Matt. And they're not familiar with it because they haven't put the time in to talk to somebody who is more schooled or more knowledgeable and could teach them that stuff, because they think they know enough to go out on their own and open their own shop, and they think they got it, and they don't, and that's the problem.
It's funny you say that, because that's always something that's bothered me about young people and like people under 33 and tattoos, is like, I feel like the tattoo culture I grew up in was completely different than the one you guys grew up in.
It is.
And I feel like part of what makes tattooing interesting to me is a sense of culture and heritage and, you know, and all these styles and yada yada. And the way it's sort of been co-opted feels that like normal people have hand tattoos now feels very strange to me.
Oh my God. If one more person sends me the, like, there's like a meme going around that's like, you know, having tattoos used to mean that you're a biker that, and that's about to kill you. Now it means you make a lovely, you know, pork tenderloin with a fucking, like, if one more person sends me that thing, I'm like, oh my God. But so let me ask you this. I'm getting a little bit off track, but the new machines that you talk about that don't emit noise, what is the advantage then? Like, what is the advantage in technology, or why is it perceived? Like, I don't know. I don't know. Why is the machinery theoretically better in 2021 than it was in 2001?
So it's not actually better. It's just different. And that's the thing. If it's not doing anything better than the other stuff, what's the point? Now, the one thing that I have heard people say is it's lighter. It's lightweight. But I don't think tattoo machines weigh that much anyways. And if you have a problem picking up a tattoo machine, then I don't know. I mean, if you can't move a tattoo machine around, I mean, for lack of a better word or for lack of a better phrase, then I mean, it's like, I don't know what the fuck you would do in life. You know, I mean, really, like, it's not the size of a hammer. It's not the size of, Christ, it probably weighs less than a pair of boxing gloves, to be honest with you, you know? And it's not like you're sitting there swinging them around. So I don't understand where these people are like, well, the tattoo machines, you know, the regular coil style, they're too heavy for me. I'm just like, I'm sorry, what? Like, it's crazy to me. So I've never physically touched one of the new ones, but that's the only thing I hear is that they're lighter. So great. I guess they're more lightweight. I don't know.
All right. Triathloning. How does that start? Where are you at with it, et cetera? I mean, I ran a 5K and I was like so ecstatic that I was able to finish it in 35 minutes. Like,
and I was very excited. I remember when you ran that 5K, I was actually super pumped for you. I was watching your journey, to be honest with you, whether you knew it or not. I was watching your runs and talking to you a little bit here and there, but I was monitoring you because I'm very avid about that. Whenever I see any of my friends or clients or anybody that pick up exercise, I get very excited about it. I've always had a challenge in my life, and I've always had mountains to climb. So my first challenge was tattooing, and then I moved to Los Angeles and wanted to be one of the best, and so I started climbing that mountain. And then I got into super bike racing. I was racing motorcycles for a while, and I was doing that professionally for a little bit, but that got to be really expensive and really dangerous. And then I got married and I had a kid, and my wife was like, hey, you know, we have a kid, it's probably not the best thing for you to be out there running around racing bikes. And I said, okay. So I hung up my hat from racing, and I just always was drawn to the Ironman for some reason. Maybe it's that challenge. Maybe it's like that badass thing about it, but it always appealed to me. And I don't know why. I never swam like Michael Phelps style as a kid. I mean, I was in a pool swimming, but I never swam laps. And I never was on a road bike that you would actually ride a bike for a triathlon. I grew up on BMX and skateboards. So when I told everybody I wanted to do an Ironman, everyone laughed at me. And I'm talking my family, my friends, but I just slowly started at it. And I found a love in it. I've been going strong for probably 15 or more years now.
How many triathlons have you done?
I mean, I've done so many that I've got medals throughout all of my career of doing them, that the medals that were hanging in my son's room about 2 months ago, they crashed off the wall because the weight was too strong. So my son the other day, we kind of put them all in a bag so I can hang them up in my bedroom. And he's like, Dad, can you get all your medals out of my room now? And I started laughing. I'm like, yes.
Wait, so just remind me and everyone that's listening and Matt, what is a triathlon?
A triathlon varies in length, but it starts off as a swim, then it goes to a bike, and then it goes to a run. So most people start off with a sprint triathlon, which is about 500 yards. Then it's usually maybe a 10-mile bike and the 5K run. Then there's an Olympic, which is a 1,500-meter swim, a 25-mile bike, and followed by a 10K run. Then you have a half Ironman, which is a 1.2-mile swim, 56 miles on the bike, and a 13.1-mile run. Then you go full Ironman, 2.4-mile swim, 112 on the bike, and a marathon to wrap up the run.
You've done the Ironman, yeah?
I've done one so far. I'm planning on doing another one next year. I've done a lot of half Ironmans. I'm really close. I'm a very competitive person, and I'm really close to qualifying for world championships. So I've been focusing at hitting world champs and going to wherever the world champs are for whatever that year is.
That's incredible to me. I mean, that what a grueling. How long does it take you to do an Ironman?
An Ironman took me 10 and a half hours. Most people will take them 12 to 16 hours. It's a full day. It's nonstop. And then when you go to Kona, the big, they call it the big dance. When you qualify and go to Kona, there's a cutoff. It's 17 hours. There have been people in the past that I watched it live. They missed qualifying or they missed the cutoff by 2 seconds or 4 seconds. Ugh. So they do not get a medal. They do not get called. You are an Ironman because they missed it by 4 seconds after 17 hours. Can you imagine?
Oh my God. So is that your goal? Is your goal to, is, I mean, is there an age limit on these things? No,
there's
right?
No age limit, but my goal is to get to Kona. One day I will get to Kona, and COVID, like everything, threw a wrench and everything for everybody. I was going good and training, and COVID hit and there was no more races.
How do you train? How do you train? Do you have swimming days, biking days, running days? Like, how do you train?
I do all three of those exactly. And I vary it. And it depends on, you know, where I'm at. My run is my strength. Like, as you know, you said you'll hit a 5K in 35 minutes.
Well, that was the only one I did, but that's what I did. Yeah.
Okay. So my 5K is like, I'm looking at like a 19-minute 5K kind of.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. No,
yeah. Yeah. Like I knocked down some fat.
I'm a fat fuck. You're a skinny little guy.
What's your marathon time?
Well, technically, I've never done a full marathon by itself outside of the
That's what my question was going to be, was what's the difference?
So, and it's a big difference.
Yeah.
Because my half marathon pace is, I can probably do like an hour and 25 minutes for a half marathon. So I should be at
That's really good.
I should be at a 3-hour marathon.
Yeah.
All right. So in the interest of kind of winding this down a little bit, let's talk about where you're at now. You've left Sunset Strip Tattoo. There was a pandemic. The pandemic is kind of over, maybe not over, maybe starting all over again. We're not really sure. But the big news is that after, you know, 2.5 decades at Sunset Strip, I'll tell you something I've never told you before. I was so naive when I met you and you were so larger than life to me that I actually, it took me a while to figure out that you didn't own Sunset Strip Tattoo. I thought you actually owned it for some time. And then along the way, I realized that you didn't own it. But anyway, so you've left there in the winding down moments that we have, like, to, you know, tell everyone, you know, what you're doing, where you're doing it, why you left Sunset Strip. Where they can find you on the socials, how they can get an appointment with you, that kind of shit.
I sort of technically didn't leave Sunset Strip. We just kind of moved it and it sort of rebranded as Sunset Tattoo because we're technically not on the strip. We had to close the old location because, like anything in this world, the big money is coming in and they're buying all the little places and they're knocking them down and putting condos with commercial real estate down below. So we had to move the location. So that was basically what we did. So we moved the location. We are up on Hollywood Boulevard, right near Hollywood and the 101. We are at 5638 Hollywood Boulevard. Technically, it's now called Sunset Tattoo. And we still have the same stuff from the shop. We brought it all over. It's all the same. And we are still technically Sunset Strip Tattoo on Instagram because we're keeping that just to kind of keep it because it's so iconic. And everything is still status quo. So we basically moved up to Hollywood Boulevard. The shop is mine now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I didn't realize how much of a big deal that was until I became the owner. Like, I never really grasped at that until it really was, you know, basically punched me in the nose and was like, well, you're now the owner. This is now your spot. So it is a big deal. It's a lot of responsibility, but it's also a really great feeling at this point in my life.
Sunset Strip Tattoo still on the socials?
On the socials, yeah. And then mine is just Paul Timman, T-I-M-M-A-N, on Instagram. They can get a hold of us through calling the shop. They can get a hold of us through DMing us through the socials, through either mine or the actual shop, any of those. And we're around. We're there. We're back at it. We had to close down like everyone through the pandemic, and now we're back because we're a little short staffed like everybody. So we're just trying to deal with it.
I hear that. Why is your nickname Pee-wee?
I got nicknamed Pee-wee out in front of the dorm when I was skateboarding doing the Pee-wee Herman dance in college, and it just stuck.
Oh, Jesus. All right. That's not as cool as I thought it was going
to
be.
I know.
For listeners, all of the ways to contact Paul and Sunset Strip Tattoos are in the show notes.
Yep. Cool. Awesome.
I just wanted to ask about the dishware, because that's like very strange. How does something like... Not just how did that come about, but how did it feel to be like, oh, cool, I design plates now? Because that must have been weird as like a rock and roll tattoo guy.
Well, it was, but also because I'm a classically trained artist, so it's one of those things that I see the design in everything. For example, when I walk into one of Chris's restaurants and the flooring tiles match the upholstery and then the stuff on the walls and the way they do their bathrooms and the little touches to things like that, I pick up on and I love it. And I get inspiration from looking at women's dresses when I see some flowers on a woman's dress, right? So other people may or may not notice that and not care, but I see that stuff. So I was approached by a company that was originally out of England, and the daughter of the mother who started the company from England moved to the States because she met a man, and they wanted to open their own line here in the States. So they wanted to do this thing that everyone was going to be edgy with, and they thought tattoos, and this is how far back it goes. This is probably, I don't know, 2010, maybe even before that. And you know, tattooing was just so big, they wanted to do it. So they approached me, they ended up talking to me, and they ended up going with somebody else, but it never worked out. And it was this guy in England, and he didn't really do the artwork. So they came back to me with hat in hand, and it worked out great. And I told them, I said, look, I'm willing to do it on one condition, is that we do it and we do it really well. And we make these really great. And you might have to make the price a little more by doing that. And they agreed. And I thought what we came up with and what we did was pretty great. So we did a couple different sets. I think Chris has one or two. We did one set.
I have two. Yeah.
So we did the Irizumi, which is based off the Japanese thing, which is what I love tattooing. And I did a dragon on the plates. And then there's a koi fish on the bowls and cherry blossoms. And then I did a cherry blossom branch style for another set.
But those are the two I have, yeah.
Yep, and those were the two that really kind of hit it out of the park, I think. I did a tribal set that other people love, and then I did a sort of more of a floral set that other people did tend to like. But unfortunately, Ink Dish closed down over the last few years just because of the pandemic and because things going a different way. And so they're not doing it anymore. So those dishes aren't available anymore, Chris. So hang on to those because... I hope they're going to be
working. What about the Ink Dish trademark? Is that yours or theirs?
No, that's theirs. And I'm still friends with them. They're still great people. Like if I decided to pick up with that and maybe do some more, I'm sure they'd be like, sure, here's our thing. And, you know, we can work something out.
I'm launching, as Matt knows, and everyone out there listening, pay attention. I'm launching a pretty big website called thisischrissantos.com. It's actually available right now, but don't go to it right now because it's not really active, but I'm opening a store where I'll be selling everything from my cookbooks and my hot sauce and my barbecue sauce and my LES NYC hats, merch from the bands on my record label, and meet and greet, virtual meet and greets and all that stuff. If you're free and available, I would love to collaborate on doing some dishware with you. That would be amazing.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Yeah, maybe we'll call it Think Dish. I don't know. So, okay, we're gonna end this. I think we might have to have you on in the future because I know that you have a lot more stories about your rock and roll endeavors. But and also I have to call you on the side so we can set up an appointment. But we're doing this thing that I'm insisting on doing now called Guilty Pleasures. It's how we wrap up the podcast. I probably won't set it up like this forever, but or maybe I will, just so you understand. But Monty Pittman is a good friend of mine. He was a guest of ours. He was Madonna's guitar player for the last two decades, and he had a song called Guilty Pleasures that he filmed the music video at Beauty in Essex. So I asked him what his guilty pleasure was when he recorded his podcast, and we both got a very surprising answer in that his guilty pleasure was Instagram cat wrestling videos, which is as bizarre as it sounds. So I am now challenging myself and Matt, although I don't know Matt knows that the challenge is there, but I'm challenging myself that every podcast I find a new guilty pleasure to reveal to everyone. So I'm going to start. 4th of July just passed, and I realized that a guilty pleasure of mine as a card-carrying metalhead who is the head of his own heavy metal record label, I'm totally enamored and in love with the song Firework by Katy Perry.
Great song.
So that is my guilty pleasure for this week's episode.
I didn't have a guilty pleasure prepared. Okay, here's my guilty pleasure. Yeah. This is a good one. You don't know this about me.
Okay.
One of my favorite things that I work on that brings me endless joy, and the thing my father is proudest of, is I do the marketing for a Flock of Seagulls merch in the USA.
Get out of here.
And I'm like an admin on the Flock of Seagulls socials and shit.
Oh my God. I ran so far away. Are you
kidding me? And like, it makes me so happy because I don't know. I get such a pleasure because, yeah, it's the I Ran So Far Away band. Yeah. And wow. Every time I like write an email for them or like make a post, I'm just like, what the fuck?
It's funny. They're playing a show. I just saw that they're playing a show here. It's like, you know, like it's like this 80s thing and they're the headliner. And I was actually like, I love Flock of Seagulls. Like I should maybe.
I mean, if you want in, like I could probably hook that up. So that's like my weird guilty pleasure.
Space Age Love Song. Is like, I'm going to play that at my wedding. Like that song is amazing.
It's a banger.
I do love Flock of Seagulls, and they are, I don't know if they're going to be, you know, they got that whole 80s thing going on at the Rose Bowl in 2022. Have you seen everybody that's headlining that?
No,
I have. That's fucking bizarre.
So it's Morrissey, Bauhaus, The Damned, Missing Persons, Peter Murphy, Gene Loves Jezebel. It's as 80s as you can get.
Is The Cure on it?
They're not. And I don't know. The only two missing are like The Cure and Depeche Mode.
Well, they did that so no one would cry.
Yes.
Missing Persons. Walking in LA. I actually now understand that song. Now that right. I live in LA.
I have written, because I also do Missing Persons, I have written a bizarre amount of Walking in LA puns for advertisements.
Oh my God.
So great.
All right.
So that's my guilty pleasure, new wave.
My guilty pleasure, because I train and work out so much, I can pretty much eat like between a quart and a pint of ice cream a night, sitting in my bed in my underwear watching Netflix.
A quart?
Yeah, like I can eat a lot of ice cream and I put it back. Lately, my guilty pleasure has been like this Dutch chocolate from like Tillamook or something like that. But
yeah, Tillamook Farms, yeah.
Yeah, I was doing the Ben & Jerry's caramel, the cold brew caramel latte. That's really good. And then I also love that Baskin-Robbins. They got that dark cherry one, like Cherry's Jubilee or something like that.
You
got
to go Häagen-Dazs chocolate peanut butter. That's the move.
I don't know. That sounds so rich.
I think Chris is right on this one.
This is why my body looks the way mine does and yours looks the way yours does.
Good call. Then I will take you up on that. I will break out some chocolate peanut butter Häagen-Dazs. I will try that.
I just want to point this out, Paul, because you said you follow people's fitness journeys. Chris lost a ton of weight between the two times I last saw him in September of 2020, and then I saw him a month ago, and he lost like I was very impressed.
I've lost weight. I've gained muscle, but I still got I've got a long way to go. But I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
Good.
I don't know what time it is in London, but Matt looks tired based on what I'm looking at in my computer screen here. Really appreciate you taking the time. Really a pleasure having you here. We will let you know when this is airing so you can put it out on your socials or whatever. And I'm sure I will see you soon. And yeah, thanks so much, man. It was really, really great swapping stories.
Thank you, you guys. It was great.
We'll catch everyone next week.
Yes. Whoever's out there listening, if you're enjoying this podcast, continue to watch it and tell your friends about it, because the guest list that we are developing for future episodes is out of control. It's going to be a fun summer, fall, and winter of Delirious Nomad podcast. So tell everybody. Until then, see you next week.
All right. So that was awesome. Thank you everyone out there for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more, and above all, keep it heavy.
Hey you, did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com, and I'll see you there.